Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 18th of August, recording at 9:20 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, let's have a look at the highlights here today. And we certainly saw plenty of bear market action in, particularly in Europe and North America and South America. But first, Asia. We had declines for most stock markets. The exceptions that I noted were Indonesia and the Philippines, which remain remarkably steady within that ASEAN sector. Declines, India fell fairly sharply, nothing like the European percentage declines, though. And we have Japan and Hong Kong and Australia all down about 1.25% on average. The European stock markets, however, were hit much harder. DAX down 5.8%, the UK down 4.5%. The biggest one, Sweden, down 6.7%, and Italy down 6.15%. In the Americas, the NASDAQ Composite down 5.2%, the S&P down nearly 4.5%, Brazil down 3.5%, Canada down over 3%. So, really big hits in here today. And against that background, not long-dated bonds, not surprisingly, saw their prices rise quite sharply. Although, as I speak in after-hours trading, the U.S. long-dated Treasury bond is down nearly 2 points off its high that it reached earlier in the day. It's still up over 1.5 points. The U.S. dollar was a bit firmer, 74.15 on the U.S. dollar index. That's up 37 ticks, and euro down to 143.41, sterling only down slightly, 165.23. Commodity currencies were hit, the Australian dollar back to 104. And we also saw a drop in the, or a rally by the U.S. against the Canadian, up to 98.92. And greenback rose a little bit against the Swiss franc, having been easier earlier on, but up to 79.37. And gold, that was the big story of the day here. Another new high, currently trading up $33 at $18.24 and change. Platinum rallied a little bit, $18.45, nearly $46. Palladium was down $20. Silver steady, $40.73. That's up. The industrial metals were all weaker quite sharply. Copper down 9 cents. Most agricultural commodities were down. I think coffee was an exception. And the crude oil market was down quite sharply. We had a decline of over $4 for Brent. That brings it down to 106.5. And WTI crude is down 5.77 as I speak at 81.81. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, we had seen the Western stock markets, and the leading Western stock markets, such as the NASDAQ Composite Index, had rallied from last Thursday's lows. Remember, we had a good rally starting last Thursday. I think I measured the percentage. I seldom do, but I think somebody was saying that the The S&P also had gone up about 10% from last Thursday's low through yesterday. Well, it's given up a big chunk of that in here today. And what it looks like overall for these type 3 top markets is that we've had a little technical rally and now it's giving way. And in the case of the NASDAQ 100, which is, say, had been so strong, it rallied right back to the underside of the top formation and bang, a downward dynamic in here today. I think that this is going to continue until we get some sort of catalyst to change things. And there's a lot to be bearish about, as we know, and I don't need to review all that, but these things become self-feeding. I've been talking about them day after day after day, but these moves also become self-feeding, and we're seeing further deleveraging. Overall, we're getting a bit of a flight to cash in addition to treasury bonds. And again, governments eventually respond to this sort of thing because bear markets have economic implications. Now, I know when I say that, I know it's not technically by every definition a bear market. Some indices have not seen the 20% plus decline that some people regard as a bear market. Well, I'm not really so much of a percentage guy in defining terms. And as far as defining terms is concerned, and my feeling is that if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, then it probably is a duck. And this is certainly looking and walking and sounding like a bear market in my opinion. And I think it'll go on a bit further until we get some sort of crisis reaction. And there's not all that much that the Fed can actually do, but I think if we do get some form of QE3, and I don't regard, as some people have said, that leaving interest rates, or saying that you'll probably leave interest rates on hold until the middle of 2013, that's not QE3. It's just very accommodative money rates. But what they might do is, of course, print more money despite some of the outrageous comments coming out of Texas. And they could step in on the S&P, although I don't think that would do anything other than cushion the downside. Really, in terms of positive policy action, it may come from China and India first. India has been embroiled in some ridiculous problems recently regarding that nice old guy, the Gandhian, who was on a hunger strike over corruption, and then they went in, arrested him, and you probably read about this. Of course, it made him a great folk hero, probably for the next century. Although fortunately he hasn't been martyred, at least not yet. But so the distractions there, but what I'm saying is that both India and China could announce that, or better yet, signal that they were no longer adhering to their tightening monetary bias by reducing rates somewhat. I do expect that to happen, but the question is when. And since commodity inflation is the whole reason, or most of the reason, as to why they actually raised those rates quite sharply, I don't think that we're going to see it overnight. And I think they'll want to see more evidence in the form of lower commodity prices. And commodity prices can be pretty stubborn, as we have seen. And it's only when the stock market falls very sharply that we see across the boards selling in a number of these commodities. Okay. Gold. It's been magnificent in terms of its overall performance. I've written about it in here today, so I'll just run through some of these points here very, very quickly. Now, again, I've talked about a lot about the recent acceleration and overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. That's always a concern when you get something like that, because it eventually results in mean reversion, and that will happen. It'll be no exception again this time. But the question is, how much of an overextension do you get to the upside? Owen pointed out in his excellent piece on precious metals on the 11th, and I'll attach another link to that here this evening when I complete the copy. He pointed out that we had bigger overextensions in percentage terms in 2006 and 2008, and that's absolutely true. And you can see that with a semi-logarithmic 10-year chart. And I'll post another one of those as well. So there's nothing that to say that gold, given the interest and given the momentum, won't become still more overextended. Now, if gold were to equal its overextension percentages of 28 and 29% that we saw in 2006 and 2008, if it were to do that quickly, that would easily push it up to $2,000, which is obviously a bit of a psychological, or would be a bit of a psychological level for gold in U.S. dollars. And if gold were to range higher in a more orderly fashion, it could go beyond that. A few of you may remember, I think I mentioned it, I know I mentioned it at least once, but I think it was more than once, two or three times in audios, probably last month, in talking about what I expected in the seasonal period of strength, and that really runs from September through the end of the first quarter. And I had mentioned that figure of $2,000 or more for gold, and that's I certainly expect to see that before the end of the year. The tricky bit in here with gold is how does one actually play it? Again, I'll repeat a point that I made over and over and over again. If you hold the bullion funds, I don't think, and are aware, as you should be, and almost certainly are, if you're aware that gold gets these mean reversions periodically, that's a good process of consolidation. And, you know, it can come down $120 or more in doing that, particularly if it gets more overextended. If you're not bothered by that, and I don't see any reason why you really should be, if you're a long-term investor in a gold ETF, then why worry? Those who are in gold shares, I think, can be reasonably relaxed. The weakness of global stock markets is a powerful headwind for the gold shares, but as a consequence of their ranging, they're becoming cheaper and cheaper at relative to what bullion is doing. So there's going to be a catch-up move there at some point. I don't think the shares will ever go up as much as bullion's going to go up. But I wouldn't worry. When I think if I held the gold shares, I'd be relaxed about it. The tricky bit is the trading of the actual futures, not least because they're volatile, and leverage trading can be chaotic. It's obviously more speculative if the price is accelerating at the time, and there is the real risk probability even that we'll get further margin hikes, and that can check progress. So the tricky bit is the trading of the futures markets. But If you are doing that, or if that's the route you wish to take, it only takes one really good day in here, and then you can place a in a market that's moving to new highs on a momentum play, and one good day, and you can place a break-even stop. So that's as long as you can, and of course you can. If someone wants to play this momentum move, and again, I repeat, of course it's speculative as the price is accelerating higher. But if you have all that on board and don't take too big a position, you can limit your loss with a stop order. Now, I just I don't make recommendations. I don't like to make recommendations because I don't think that's our role. Our role is to analyze and global it's global strategy, and then to provide tactics, discuss tactics, and Fuller Money subscribers are grown-up men and women who like the service because they make their own decisions in here, and so you obviously should. Nobody's ever going to be more interested in your investment money than you are. So we're about empowerment, not about saying do this, do that, and so that's what I'm outlining here. And I think the other precious metals will move accordingly. There is a risk. There is a contagion risk. There are always risks. There's a contagion risk that if the stock market decline becomes too hectic. Hopefully that won't happen, but it is a risk that that drags things down, as we saw in 2008. And yes, it can also be different this time, given the momentum and the increased interest that we have in gold bullion and all the additional rather fiat money that's floating around in the system. But expect volatility. It comes with the territory, and what we're seeing today is more volatile than ever, or more volatile than usual. So, industrial commodities, weak stock markets will drag them down. They'll also drag down agricultural commodities because it's part of the deleveraging process overall. And I mentioned before that I'd like to see crude oil a whole lot lower because that gives us an important reset. And that's certainly the way we're heading if we go the recession route in these big Western economies. And there's quite a high possibility of that, as you already know. Well, best you can say is it's exciting here, and the valuations are continuing to improve. I'm not rushing in, but I'm certainly looking around, and one is spoiled for choice in a bear market. We don't want to pay too much for anything in case markets do overshoot. My first bite will almost certainly be something high yielding in the energy sector, but not yet. Because we've got a market that's behaving very much like a bear trend, and I think the realization of that is relatively recent, and therefore we can certainly see some additional selling before we get a sustainable low, reach a sustainable low. Okay, all the best.